It's the final installment of our series On the Rocks, a look at Wisconsin's alcohol culture. All week, we've been looking at different aspects of our state's relationship with drinking. Yesterday, we spoke with a seven-time OWI offender about her alcoholism and her recovery.
Today, we're taking a closer look at some solutions to Wisconsin's alcohol problems. Jeremy Arney is with us. He's Assistant Professor of Political Science and Public Administration at UW-La Crosse. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I know you came here from Colorado. What was your impression of our use of alcohol here in the state?
Well, since my wife is originally from Wisconsin, we visited here several times before actually moving here from Colorado. And I often found myself commenting on how cheap the beer was in the stores and in the towny bars that we'd visit around our hometown. And don't get me wrong, living in Colorado is expensive, especially when you're a student. And so I had nothing at the time against cheap beer here in Wisconsin.
So, and that one idea you've researched is related to that. An idea to change the alcohol culture, you say, is raising the beer tax. How would an increased alcohol tax change things?
Well, although I'm not an economist, I've read several studies that address price controls, and it's always been seen as one of the best economic policy tools to get people to change their risky behavioral patterns. And so costing extra has been shown to help deter reckless drinking behavior among, say, teenage populations on fixed incomes. And all week you've been talking about on this show the high costs of alcohol-related incidences. And so raising alcohol taxes would increase revenue to help offset some of those costs and pay for treatment and prevention programs as well.
And it's been a while, you say, since we raised it too long, you say.
Well, in fact, 1969 was the last time, so the 45th anniversary is this October.
So what are the barriers? Why don't we raise that tax as some other places have done?
Well, there are many barriers. First of all, people don't like taxes in general, and tax increases even less. They don't like throwing their money into the abyss of a general fund where nobody knows exactly how it gets spent or what programs it's going to be spent on. And then on the other side, if you earmark the revenue for increases in prevention and treatment and enforcement, the politics of who gets what, when, and why come into play. You may need additional support from other advocacy groups for a tax increase to become successful. But at what point are there just too many hands in the pie and then the revenue just isn't enough to get spread out to become even useful?
So you like the idea, but you're not holding your breath.
No. And there's a big reason, probably bigger than that, is the political will is just not there, really. And it doesn't matter on either side of the aisle to raise alcohol taxes, but especially those currently in control of the legislative and executive branches. They're not interested in any type of tax increase soon. And as one of the legislators that I've interviewed in the past painted the picture to me like this, they said that there's a lot of rural areas in the state, and when you go back as a representative to one of these areas, you're going to be doing your campaigning in the local towny bar. And even if you only get, say, $100 or less in campaign donations, you're not going to tell your constituents that you're going to support an alcohol tax increase on the very same beer and alcohol that they're drinking socially all year round at that towny bar. So that's a political suicide in the drinking culture such as ours. So getting a beer tax increase an extremely uphill battle, both politically and culturally here in the state.
And before we move on from the beer tax idea, I mean, there are brewers in the state. There's the Tavern League. Do you see them having a lot of clout preventing this from being a realistic alternative?
Yes. In addition to those barriers, I'd say that alcohol policies are not something that the two parties are going to be butting heads over anytime soon. And I don't know if it really matters if the Tavern League has a strong input or say at this point, because they're not obviously spending any money lobbying for against a beer tax increase.
So moving away from a statewide solution or effort like a beer tax, you've made the case for community approaches. Why do you think local communities can take the lead on confronting alcohol culture here in the state?
Because I think that they feel the effects of risky drinking. They're more vivid to everyone that lives in the community. And so there's several, I've noticed around the state, because I work in alcohol policy, there's several grassroots approaches in communities around the state that are actually addressing the issue, and they include or attempting to include everyone in the community to help create these solutions at the local level.
Well, you're doing some work in La Crosse. So can you just paint us a broad picture of some of the community efforts you've got going there, and we'll drill down into some of them a little closer.
Sure. Well, because of the river drownings that we had earlier, several of us formed a coalition to address risky drinking behavior at that time of just young adults between 18 and 25. And our coalition has had support from a tri-campus committee, which is made up of the leadership and student representations from all three campuses here in La Crosse. So first, we decided to approach taverns and the drinking establishments and ask if they would work with us to establish some harm reduction strategies and guidelines to help make La Crosse drinking establishments safer places to be patrons of. And our La Crosse Tavern League president said they'd be willing to look over a list of guidelines only if they were derived from their best customers, and that is the students. So I had my health policy students come up with some best practice ideas that they felt would work in La Crosse and would be presentable to the Tavern League. And then the Tavern League, they took it to the board and they accepted the suggestions. And over time, we had a voluntary agreement where they would abide by certain best practice standards. And then they were able to allow window clings to be put in the front window to advertise to clientele that they were supportive of adhering to some of these safer practices.
So if I'm a tavern keeper, what are some of the safer practices I need to agree to get that sticker in my window?
Responsible beverage service and training, so taking a tips course, your bartenders to help you identify people who have been overserved, offering more food options later into the night, having more availability of non-alcoholic beverages and discounts on those too, employees not being allowed to drink while they're on the job, which is a city ordinance anyway. And the real kicker that we found that really got people's attention was also no all-you-can-drink specials. And so in order to be part of the program, you had to abide by all of those guidelines.
And you've also, as a community effort, looked at Oktoberfest and the Oktoberfest parade there. That's a holiday definitely associated with beer. What are you doing along those lines?
Well, this is our fourth year that we've offered a prime location along the parade route that is entirely alcohol-free. So there's plenty of bleachers, fun activities for the kids to participate in, and everyone is given a free T-shirt. So a sea of 700 family-zoned participants stand out to those that go to the parades, and also those that actually walk in the parade. They stop and they get involved and interact with the crowd, and we've noticed that the bands will stop and play because they have such a larger cohesive crowd listening to them, a captive audience, so to speak. So it's been very successful. We had to go to the city council in order to get a permit to do that, and over the years, the Oktoberfest organization themselves have been really helpful and supportive because they want to also bring the image of it just being a beer-drinking event back to a family-oriented event.
Well, and what's the response been from the families? Are they showing up for a less beer-focused Oktoberfest?
I believe the families are, and I think that we've seen, each year we've seen incremental increases in the numbers of people that are showing up. And so, I think our first year we had around 300, 350 people, and now last year we had around 700, and this year we expect even more. People just like the fact that they can come and watch the parade and not have to worry about people spilling beer on them or being rude and doing all kinds of other things. It's a peaceful, it's fenced off. And if anyone comes in that's drinking alcohol, they're told to leave. So it's highly enforced, too, and it does the trick.
And one more, you mentioned a big target audience is college students. You've started an effort called Party Zero in the La Crosse area. What is that?
Well, I didn't start the effort, but I've been impressed with the effort.
Okay.
It started in Oshkosh. And a student that graduated from there last year came to our campus and talked to a couple fraternities on our campus and then several leaders as well. And basically, it's just students holding alcohol-free social events off campus, outside of campus. And so their party is just like any other party you'd think in college that has DJs, dancing, lawn games, competitions, gift bags, and all that stuff, which is donated by the local businesses. But they even play beer pong, and just without the beer, so soda or whatever non-alcoholic beverage they want to consume. And the effort, they had their first party last Friday, and the president of the fraternity said that there was at least, at one point, there was 300 people there, and consistently there was 100 people there until 1 a.m. So this is good news. There's alternative things for students to actually participate in besides the drinking culture.
We're talking to Jeremy Arney of UW La Crosse now about some community-based solutions to Wisconsin's alcohol problems.
And we're taking your calls on this. What is your community doing to combat the prevalence of alcohol? And what are you doing to promote a healthier relationship with alcohol? What do you think needs to be done to cut down on the negative consequences of drinking in Wisconsin? If you've got ideas, we're interested to hear them. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send email to talk@WPR.org.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation now with Jeremy Arnie of UW La Crosse about solutions to Wisconsin's troubled relationship with alcohol.
And we're taking your calls now. What do you think needs to be done to solve Wisconsin's alcohol problems? Are there things going on in your community to try to change our relationship, our culture when it comes to alcohol? How do you think the state should address this problem? How do you think local communities should do it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to a caller now. We've got Joe on the line in Oshkosh. Joe, hi.
Hi. Well, you know, I've been listening to most of the programs for the week, and most of the emphasis really has been on what I would classify as formal social controls, that is laws and regulations, health care policies, et cetera. Really, the only long-term solution to changing alcohol culture is through informal social controls. And those are mainly interventions by family, friends, people who have some relationship, significant relationship to the person who's having problems. And what we don't do in our culture at all is we don't teach people how to intervene on alcohol problems informally, and we don't have a prohibition against drunkenness. The emphasis is on alcoholism, drunken driving, and especially any drinking at all. And in cultures where any drinking at all is bad, can drunkenness be any worse? And for the most part, it's not. And that's what's really lacking in our culture, is we do not have this cultural prohibition against drunkenness.
Gotcha, Joe. Thanks a lot for the call. Let's tackle that first point, or that second point first, Jeremy. And it kind of feeds in. I mean, if we tie together the three things you were talking about, that party zero, the alcohol-free parties on campuses, the alcohol providers, the taverns trying to serve more responsibly, and that Oktoberfest, the beer-free portion of Oktoberfest, part of that seems like it's geared toward changing our assumption that recreation has to involve alcohol.
Yes, definitely. That is the attempt. And specifically, I mean, Joe had mentioned individuals, and so interventions done by an individual's peer groups or family. And I think that we were taking it further to not just 18 to 25-year-olds with the party zero, but also family aged, you know, people that are older in their 30s or whatever, that you don't need alcohol and you can go have a good time with your kids without it. So I think that's correct too. And also I hope to get as a theme throughout here is that specifically if you want to change the culture of risky drinking between 18 and 25-year-olds, you better have buy-in and active participation in that changing of the culture by the 18 to 25-year-olds. And I think in some of the community approaches that we talked about today, and then we didn't get to assessing festivals either, but that's something that we utilize young adults to go out and observe their community and actually see that. And then they tell their peers that, look, I went to this festival and I saw how much people were drinking. I saw how big the containers were. I saw how cheap it was. All of those things are conducive to changing the culture.
And you talked to some festival organizers, too, I think. What did you talk to them about in regards to alcohol?
Well, we so like I mentioned, we had students, mostly students looking for part-time work, and other people go to the various festivals. We have a ton of festivals here in La Crosse throughout the year. And so they would observe whether or not people are being overserved, whether volunteers are drinking while they're performing their duties, like I mentioned, size of containers, like our pitchers being used. And after we collected all that data, we gave feedback to the festival organizers about the safety levels or lack thereof from our observations. And in the past, when we first started this, we got all of them together in the same room and shared the aggregate data of what we found, and then discussed amongst, and then they let them discuss amongst each other what they found to be the best practices, what made their event run more smoothly, switching to aluminum cans or shutting down alcohol services an hour earlier or telling volunteers they can't drink. And I thought it was really useful to give them that feedback, and then so they would address it. Currently, we don't bring them all together again, but we still send them letters with their results and then an open invitation that we'll come and discuss those results with them at their leisure.
We'll go back to our callers. We've got Mary on the line in Milwaukee. Mary, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I would like to tell you something that just happened to me this afternoon. My husband and I are driving west from Milwaukee right now, and we were on North Avenue. And there's a tavern, I won't name them, but they had a sign outside, and the sign said, $12 all you can drink. I was so appalled by it, and this is a UWM neighborhood. There's a couple of UWM dormitories, actually, just a few blocks away from this tavern. So I tried to think, who could I talk to about this, and I didn't have any luck with directory assistance trying to call the tavern itself. So I ended up calling the local police district, and I got a clerk on the line, and I tried to explain to him that I wanted to talk to somebody in crime prevention or something about it. He wouldn't put me through to anyone, and when we're going away for the weekend, but when I get back to Milwaukee next week, I would like to get in touch with either my alderman or the tavern owner or UWM and talk to them about how appalling this $12 all you can drink offer was to me.
Mary, thanks. And that brings up a really interesting point, Jeremy. If someone in a community sees something they don't like, whether it's these all-you-could-drink specials or something else, and they think, gosh, I think this is a problem, they're one person. Where do they start? How do they start trying to reach out to their community or their electeds?
That's a great problem to try to solve in an area like Milwaukee. Because I don't know of the various coalitions that are affiliated with, alcohol use and abuse. In Milwaukee, I've actually been to Milwaukee to conferences and talked to people there that are getting neighborhoods started, neighborhood groups started, but just haven't gotten there. But I think your alderman's a great place to start, as you mentioned, city council, even your local law enforcement. But UWM has to have some kind of alcohol resource, counseling center or something like that that she could call and maybe they can connect her, like network her with someone in her community that they can get together and address this issue. Because it is a business practice, and until we realize that it's a bad business practice, it's going to keep happening.
And you've got a coalition in the La Crosse area working on a lot of these issues. What happened to make that happen, to bring people together and start trying to work on solutions?
Well, unfortunately, it originally came about because of the drownings, the high number of drownings that we had from student age populations in La Crosse. And so that enough caused the universities to get together, and then the universities, a committee on the university, which turned into our coalition. And we've applied, as most coalitions do, or most nonprofits and advocacy organizations, we applied for grants and were able to apply for grants in the Wisconsin state area and had the resources, had people that we knew that would help us in the grant writing process, and then just wrote them and submitted them. And we had, and also it didn't hurt that La Crosse was ranked like in the top four binge drinking counties of the state. So that alone and the drownings helped our cause to get those funds to help address that issue.
Well, do you think outside of your area, do you think enough people in Wisconsin are concerned about the alcohol culture to do what they're doing in La Crosse to come together and try to make some changes?
Well, thankfully, I spent hopefully the last 20 minutes or so answering yes to that question. I think that there are plenty of people, organizations, and groups around the state that are making changes, and I'm excited about these new approaches being driven by the younger population to further cultural change here in Wisconsin. So I'm optimistic about this. I've lived here for 7 years, and this is the most involved I've seen communities get together and really address this issue together at a community level.
Bring it back to where we started. If communities keep doing this, do you think the state as a whole will follow, the state government as a whole would follow?
You would hope, right?
All right, we'll leave it there.
We'll leave it there. There are political boundaries that might interfere with that. But, you know, if we start getting back to being able to elect our officials and them not determining who elects them, then I think we'll have a good shot at that change at the legislative level, too.
Jeremy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciated it.
That was Jeremy Arney, Assistant Professor of Political Science and Public Administration at UW-La Crosse. He was with us for this final installment of our week-long series, On the Rocks, a look at Wisconsin's alcohol culture.
You can take a look back at each installment of the series and post your comments at WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret, and this is Central Time on the Ideas Network.